want to tell you the story about my wife and my family and myself on our way to Indianapolis for the unexpected funeral of my father. Starts about 4 years ago, New Year's Eve. I got a call from a relative. My father had unexpectedly passed away in Indiana. I live in California. It was quite unexpected and an emotionally saddening event. I had to round up all my children. I have six of them, ages little to all the way grown. Got them to the airport, baby bags, car seats, luggage and all. Stood in line for a half hour, only to find that the flight to Indianapolis had been canceled because, remember, it was New Year's Eve on the East Coast. The flight coming to Los Angeles couldn't get through because it was snowbound in New York. Through a number of machinations, I was able to persuade the airline to buy seats for my wife and my six children and myself on a flight that another airline had in 2 or 3 hours. That was the good news. The bad news was the flight was all the way in the other end of the terminal. If you've ever been to Los Angeles International, it's a very large airport. We got the kids. We got all the luggage again. We got on the tram. We shuttled, holding baggage and car seat and little babies in our arms and keeping track of little and big kids all the way through to the line at the other airline, which now was so long it was unbelievable because it wasn't just the people who were scheduled to fly on the airline itself. It was all the other 250 people who'd had their flight canceled from the previous airline. We'll make a long story short. We get up to the line finally, and my wife is very nice, and I'm very nice, and the people are being very nice on the ticket counter, and we say, all we ask, we don't care where we sit, because we understand that it was a problem, and your airline didn't expect to have all these people at the last minute, but all we ask is we have all these little children, will you please seat us together? The woman said, of course we will. Right now it's a little bit erratic because everyone's got seats here and there, but once we get everyone sat down, we'll move you into the seats. Boarding commences. Make a long story short, we get to the first seat we had assigned. It was on a bulkhead. We had one seat. It was the outside of the bulkhead. And the flight attendant, because it was so hectic and frenetic, was extremely rude to my wife when she asked if it was possible that they could seat her with one of our children. She said, I'm sorry, there's no guarantees. This is a terribly overfilled flight. It's frenetic. And my wife was very, very firm, but very, very respectful. And there was a man sitting next to our seat. And the stewardess asked him if he would be willing to exchange for one of our seats so that we could sit with one of our children. My wife wanted to sit with the baby. He said, no. He said, no. I paid for the seat. I reserved the seat months and months ago. I'm not going to relinquish it. I was very upset because this is when I tended to become extremely ballistic-minded. And I found myself getting redder and redder and my blood pressure rising higher and higher and my emotional state getting more and more intense. But there was something wrong because the angrier I became, the more my wife smiled. I didn't get it. What did she know that was good about the situation that I was basically overreacting to and was furious about? Well, let me tell you. She looked at the man who was unwilling to relinquish his seat, and she said, are you sure you wouldn't consider exchanging seats with us? And he looked at her firmly and said, absolutely not. She smiled even more. She commenced to bend down, take the baby car seat, strap it into the chair, stick the baby in the car seat, belt him in, and then she looked at the man who refused to relinquish his seat, and she said, sir, if he starts to cry a little bit, give him this. And she handed the man his bottle. If he cries a lot, you might try this. And she gave him a diaper and diaper wipes, and she walked away. Now, what's the point of this story? Number one, I told you earlier in the program, you make the rules you live by. Number two, being willing to test different responses than the normal ones you might be inclined because of habit or because of cultural hypnosis to make, and watching to see the different, the more productive or positive or desirable outcome they produce. testing is the most powerful and meaningful and overlooked and underutilized advantage you've got available to you in pursuing and applying and harvesting your own secret wealth. I am very privileged. Early in my life, I was introduced to some very analytical-minded scientists. They taught me the philosophy of testing. They showed me that one approach to something might produce a massively different outcome. Let me explain an example from a good friend of mine to show you the power. Tony Robbins is a friend and a colleague of mine. I introduced and explained to him a few months back the concept of the three ways to grow a business and the testing and the different possibilities that I use in business and showed him all kinds of applications it had into personal life. He took it to an even neater application. A few months ago, he was called in to do some consulting with the Los Angeles Kings hockey team. He took the concept to a different application. Instead of three ways to grow a business, he identified the finite number of ways you improve the performance of a hockey team. And he reduced it down to the 10 or 12 most important. I don't know hockey, but I think it was scoring and defense and offense and power plays and whatever the opposite of power plays are and seven other key components. Then he value ranked the performance of the team at that particular point in time from 1 to 10. Then he had the team themselves come up with solutions and possibilities for different options, different ways, different approaches. They might make each category somewhat to very much more effective or productive. For example, if you did this strategy, maybe you could make your defense 10% or 15% more effective. And he went through an incredible listing of all the different options they might try. Then in the subsequent game, they went out and they tried different combinations they had listed. And when one worked, they kept it in. When one didn't work any better or worked less effective than what they were doing, they went back to what they had been doing and tried another one until they found something superior. The result, in that one game, they were able to score over 6 goals, which was unbelievable just by understanding the power of this geometric progression and the power of testing. It applies directly to your life, too. You've got all kinds of situations. From this point forward, you've got to say to yourself, how many different ways could I respond, or could I communicate, or could I approach the situation? And then you've got to try different possibilities, and you've got to gauge what the outcome, what the result, what you get out of it. One approach will always outproduce another, by little or by a lot. Your obligation to yourself, your challenge, your goal is to find those approaches, those techniques, those strategies in each aspect of your life and your relationships that produce the optimum benefit, the optimum outcome, the optimum result and performance for you. And those are the ones you should use to replace the ones you've been using. I think it's appropriate now to go back to my illustrative basis of what we've done with a technique or a concept in business and bring it back home tangibly for you. So let's talk about testing. When I work with business owners, I teach them the following. By understanding and utilizing testing, you become the absolute optimum business owner and marketer and advertiser and selling company in your marketplace. Why? Because you question and you examine and you try and you compare and you test all kinds of different ways of saying something, of advertising something, of pricing something, of guaranteeing something, and you find by trying different possibilities, one always outproduces the other by a big margin. So you end up getting the best yield you can from every activity you engage in. Parenthetically, my goal for you is for you to get everything you can out of everything you've got and everything you do. Now, let's talk about what testing has meant to business owners. Very early in this program, I talked to you about the fact that it takes you the same effort, the same emotion, the same hours, the same money if you spend money, to do anything that produces X as it would if you got 2 or 3 or 5 or 10X yield out of it. The difference in the yield is the difference in the strategy you use, not the time or the effort or the emotion you invest. In business, we use testing to tell us all kinds of things. I'll give you the basic way we do it so you'll get a familiarity. It'll be fun for you. If you don't know about business, it'll be very valuable. If you're in business, it'll be interesting either way. When you run advertising, the most powerful element you can change to alter massively the upside effect of an ad is the headline. Most people who run ads don't even use headlines, but the headline is in fact the ad for the ad. It is the opening statement. It is the cluster of words that does more to determine how many people will read the ad and respond to it, and how the ad positions your company or your product or your service or your offer. By changing only the headline and nothing else, you can improve the performance of that ad by as much as 21 times, which is 2100%. Stated differently, the same ad somebody runs full page in a newspaper on Sunday could produce 21 times more response, more customers, more prospects, more business, more profit, just by changing the headline. With that said, I go out of my way to get every client of mine and everybody who comes to my training programs to test their headlines all the time. I'll give you an example of what one test did for a client of mine a few years ago. I was involved in the precious metals business. I had a client who sold gold and silver. They ran ads in the Wall Street Journal offering potential customers and investors the chance to buy gold and silver on a basis where a bank would finance a large part of the purchase. They ran ads that had the following headline: 2/3 bank financing on silver and gold. When that client ran those ads, they were satisfactory enough in the result they produced that the client made enough money to pay for the ad, the salesman made enough money to make an adequate living and a commission, there's enough money left over to pay the overhead and have money to run the ad again. But I asked them a simple question. I said, have you ever examined other and better and more graphically illustrative ways of stating that headline? In other words, have you ever tried to address what's in it for the customer? Because when you make a statement that says 2/3 bank financing, it's just a declarative statement. That doesn't really go very far to demonstrate and illustrate and prove what the value or the benefit or the advantage is to the customer for taking action. They said, no, we never have. So I sat down and I tried three different headlines that I wrote out. It took me about 5 minutes. They tried them in three different ads the next month. One headline outproduced the other headlines by 5 times. Stated differently, the old ad that used to produce $50,000 in sales every time it was run started producing $250,000 in sales from the same $5,000 investment. What did I do to change it? All I did was denominate and explain the result and the advantage that would accrue to the customer clear and better in a more exciting way. Remember, this ad was running adequate with the headline 2/3 bank financing on silver and gold. Gold was selling back then for $300 an ounce. Silver was selling for approximately $6 an ounce. I changed the headline to say this: if gold is selling for $300 an ounce, send us just $100 an ounce and we'll buy you all the gold you want. I did the same for silver. If silver is selling for $6 an ounce, send us just $2 an ounce and we'll send you all the silver you want. That simple repositioning, that simple illustration of what was in it for the reader, in their pocket, advantageously, self-servingly, changed the entire pulling power of that ad from bringing in $50,000 every time it ran to $250,000. You have within your life the very same power. All you have to do is test all kinds of different approaches. When I'm looking at the factors to test in business, I look on a descending basis as follows. The first thing I test and try out is the headline. Now, the headline is not just the opening statement in a print ad. It's the first paragraph that appears in a letter. It's the first words that are uttered when somebody starts a selling proposition or presentation. It's the first words that are uttered when somebody walks into somebody's retail store or somebody's company. It's the first words that are uttered when somebody calls somebody on the phone to get an appointment, to introduce them, to sell them something. What does the headline or its equivalent mean to your life, to your job, to your business? Well, it's probably the first words you utter when you're trying to make a case or sell your point of view to a friend, to an employer, to a customer. the next element that I will test in a business application is the proposition or the concept upon which a business is basing their proposition of offering their service or their product to the customer. What does this mean to you? Well, it means you might want to question and examine the whole basis upon which you're presenting or offering yourself in a relationship, because you may be failing to recognize the key element, which is, what's the value in it for others? What's in it for the other side? Keep in mind, the closer normally you can get, and this is what we found from testing hundreds and thousands of possibilities and different ways of doing things, the more and the closer and the clearer you get in your focus on your purpose or on the basis of offering your product or service to the fact that the customer, in this case, others you're dealing with in whatever relationships you're talking about, business, job, or life, they want to know, what's it going to do to improve the quality or the profitability or the security of my blank life, situation, business, performance? All you got to do is keep your eye on focused on that. But anyway, let's go through. The next thing I test is how well or how many different ways they go about relieving or eliminating the risk for the other side to take action. If you don't relieve the risk from the other side, you limit your successes, you limit your effectiveness. If you have currently no risk reversal, the mere fact that you add it and integrate it into the way you communicate your offer, and keep in mind, doesn't matter what the application, you are a business, someone is your customer. The way you express and communicate your offer by just adding risk reversal to it, tests have proven it will normally go through the roof. It will increase the effectiveness and the success and the profitability, defined as being whatever profit means to you. The next thing I test is the ability of the company to clearly express the benefits to their customer. I talked about this earlier on a different tape, but let's review it again. How many ways and how effective are the ways you are currently or you could be currently helping your customer, whoever he or she may be? How many ways can you, do you help them see the benefits in their behalf of doing what you want them to do? The more and the clearer and the more powerful you can help dimensionalize the advantage and the benefit to them, and you do it by showing benefits many different ways, the more effective, the more successful, the more profitable you'll be in your endeavors. Finally, we analyze and test different ways to get people to take action. And by the way, in different applications, there are different ways to be most effective. Performing in life at your optimum level is going to be different for each individual who listens to this tape. You might find that the way you lead people to action is more direct. Someone else might find, because of the application that they use this for, they've got to be more gentle. They might have to be more indirect and let the other side make the final conclusion. There is no right or wrong in the process of using and mastering your secret wealth. There only is the fact that you need to test all kinds of different propositions, all kinds of different approaches, until you find that approach or that combination of approaches that produces for you a far superior result than the one you're getting right now. If you seek to optimize your effectiveness, your performance, and your profitability, you do not have the right to decide what your customer wants. You do not have the right to decide what they are going to respond best to. You have instead the obligation to ask them by posing to them different test possibilities and evaluating and measuring which approaches produce the greatest response. It's so easy, it's shameful if you don't do it. Now, for those impatient listeners, among you. Let me give you another point of clarity. When I explain the concept of testing from business and then I translate it to life and to jobs and back to business and relationships, a lot of people initially have a knee-jerk reaction. Their first response is, well, I'm in a hurry, A. B, I don't have a lot of time or a lot of money, and I don't know why I would want to test. Well, let me give you an answer that stems from a lot of work I did with the people who were behind the discoveries of management genius W. Edwards Deming. This is the man whose discoveries and philosophies allowed the Japanese to, in a very short period of years, escalate their success levels hands above this country's just because they understood and they applied the simple rules you're about to discover. What Dr. Deming discovered was simply this. He was the man who identified and articulated the concept of the law of optimization. He said, with every aspect of a business is a process. And as a process, first of all, it can be identified, it can be measured, it can be improved. If you have a goal of improving your profit, your performance, your success, your effectiveness, your richness of relationship, you can't do it by hoping and wishing. All you have to do is identify the various processes you currently use to do whatever it is you do or to accomplish whatever it is you accomplish. Break it down to the simplest identifiable level and then work on improving each facet. It is so simple. In your job, you might have 7 areas of performance. One may be your technical performance. One may be your interpersonal performance. One may be your extending yourself above and beyond the call of duty. One may be your ability to mentor and teach other people. One may be your leadership performance, and on and on. I'm just using an example as in your job. You might find that you're great in one, but you could be greater. You might find that you're mediocre in another, but you could be great. You might find that you're absolutely lousy in another, but you could be at least mediocre. By going from lousy to mediocre in one category, from great to greater, and from good to great, you could increase your overall performance, effectiveness, and profitability by tens or hundreds of percent. What Dr. Deming taught people was how to optimize every aspect of their situation. It's very simple. The first thing you do is you identify what the processes are in your life, in your job, in your business. Then you measure how those processes currently perform. There's one other little trick in this, and that is, it is rare that performance is constant. Sometimes your performance may be great. Sometimes your performance may be less than great. You should graph both of them as best you can and identify them, because your goal in life is so simple. It's to get this variance, this difference between being great or being mediocre from time to time in a various process. You want to lower the variance to non-existent. You want to bring that to where you're constant. And when you're constant, that becomes what you call your baseline, where you're at right now. All you have to do to massively grow, to massively improve, to massively increase your profitability is, first of all, identify your processes. Second of all, eliminate variance. Third of all, work on ways to improve each process and grow above the baseline you've been at in the past. It's so simple. It's amazing nobody does it. It is easy to continually identify, evaluate, measure, and improve, because once you get to a certain level of improvement, because now you're testing, now you're examining, now you're questioning, all you do is you ask yourself, well, what other ways could I improve? And if you don't have any answers, you go outside yourself and you say, what other ways are other people or other companies or other individuals performing this better or improving upon this? It's a very simple and exciting process that will easily work for you. In business, I teach people how to track and measure their results. I encourage you to do the very same. You will find, we talked just a minute ago about this concept of baseline. Let me give you an easier reference. I used Deming's actual terminology originally because I want to give credit where credit is due. Let me give you my terminology. You identify what you are doing today, this moment, in every aspect you can segregate and identify and measure. That becomes your control. Each process you identify, the level of performance you're at, becomes your control level. You measure that, you document that, and on a constant basis, you keep remeasuring as you add improvements, as you test better approaches, and when you get better approaches that perform better, they replace whatever you were doing before. It's a simple process of stair-stepping with testing, substituting, improving, and just doing it constantly. Look at it in navigation terms. You need to figure out where you are today, where you're going, and then you just have to figure the most effective trajectory to get you to your outcome. But most people don't have the slightest idea of where they're at right now, much less where they're going. And if they have an idea of where they're at, which is very, very rare, where they think they want to go may be so much lower than they're capable of achieving because they have self-limited. By eliminating any ceiling on your own performance, it becomes easy to accomplish anything you want. I want to give you some guidelines to help you practice innovation on an ongoing basis. In order to do that, you've got to understand, recognize, and respect the fact that every great discovery, every great achievement, every great accomplishment that life, that business, that science, that the arts has ever known was only made possible as a direct result of some human being practicing innovation. It was only possible by somebody questioning whether there was a better answer, whether there was a better approach, whether greater benefit could be produced or brought or delivered to somebody or to something in a better way. Let me try to be very specific about the easiest ways to innovate. It's to create for yourself a simple, either written or mental, template or matrix or list, if you will, of questions you ask yourself daily. They can be written, they can be oral, they can be privately asked silently to yourself. The questions might be as follows. One, what is it about what's transpiring that could be made more effective? What is it about what I'm doing now that I could be doing better, more successfully, more profitably? What is it about what I'm doing right now that could bring greater benefit or value to the other side? What is it about what I'm engaged in right now that the other side is looking to get a benefit from? What is it that someone is looking to receive from the effort I am expending? In essence, you ask a lot of what ifs. Another trick to develop your ability to continuously innovate is two things. Number one, go back through everything you've learned in your relationship, job, business, and ask yourself, how many different ways could I do that now? And then ask yourself the next question, how many better ways could I do that now? Then ask yourself another question, how many more effective ways could I do that now that would bring greater benefit to my customer, my employer, my supervisor, my etc.? Then I want you to look outside. The greatest innovations that I have studied have come from people who made it their business to observe and study ways people outside of their industry or their field or their life had conducted their life or their business or their job. I've discussed two or three times in this program the importance of going outside your situation, the importance of traveling outside your comfort zone. The importance of doing this is that it is the foundational basis that stimulates more innovation than any other factor I have been privileged to study. The question that's posed to me most often when I discuss innovation is, can anyone be an innovator? Everyone is an innovator. They just don't recognize it. Sometime in your life, you see combinations and you come up with new ideas. All innovation is coming up with new ideas and applying them. Most of us are afraid to apply them. If you're not afraid, if instead of fear, you replace that feeling with a sense of curiosity, of discovery, of adventure in the way you look at combining new possibilities, and you realize, by the way, I didn't say this one thing in testing, and I should say it now. The wonderful thing about testing is that the downside risk is so low as to be insignificant. Most people want definitiveness, and life doesn't always give you definitiveness. Sometimes life basically gives you indicativeness. If you see something that looks like it indicates that something is more successful or more responsive or produces a positive or a greater result than what you were doing, you owe it to your secret wealth. You owe it to everything you believe in and everything you're on this earth to accomplish to take it to the next level and try it a little deeper and revalidate it and retest it. It's that simple. It's that easy. It's that powerful.